Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
He's got all the what you want to know and maybe some of what you don't want to know. Here's K-State insider Tim Fitzgerald.
All right, and welcome back in, everybody. Hour number two kicks off with our K-State insider, GoPowerCat.com publisher Tim Fitzgerald, getting ready for the big one, Fitz. I don't know if this is the sentiment for K-State fans. I would assume you're kind of with us. Really glad this game looks like it's going to be fun and interesting and competitive and wild. Much different than it did maybe a month ago.
Yeah.
Looks like we're going to get a good one, I think, this weekend, the way KU's been playing the last couple weeks.
I agree. I think KU might have found some solutions. Looks like Jalen Daniels is playing better. This is the same team we thought would compete for a Big 12 title, and there were reasons why, and they're wildly talented. I've just never seen a team go through exactly what they did in losing those close games. It wasn't a meteor falling from the sky. There was something going on that wasn't working for him, and Lance Leipold, being a pretty good coach, I think is figured it out and got him back on course. And this would be huge because they've got a rough patch coming down the home stretch if they want to get bowl eligible. And this would be a big step for them. But, you know, K-State always seems to rise to the occasion in this game, even last year when I thought KU was the better team on the field.
You know what? I was really impressed with the most, Fitz, when the Wildcats went to Morgantown last weekend, was the way that they were able to utilize DJ Giddens, because West Virginia, I mean, they made it pretty clear, like, they wanted to stop Giddens on the ground. That was something that they really wanted to do. But Avery Johnson, able to get him involved in the passing game, and Giddens was successful in doing so. That's something that, you know, again, the versatility and just everything that Giddens brings to the table. Now you've got, you know, multifaceted attack with this guy who is probably the best running back in the Big 12. I would imagine that's something that they want to continue to lean on.
Yeah, look, DJ Giddens has been dominant. And if a defense wants to commit that many resources to stop him, Avery Johnson just proved he can make you pay maybe even a bigger price than you would have paid by letting DJ operate a little bit better. So that was a really positive sign for Kansas State. You can see Avery Johnson's growth taking place, that would not have been nearly as good looking earlier in the year. He would have been thrown maybe a pick or two and had some mistakes, but he was right on track with this, how he played in this game. And he delivered everything K-State needed to answer the thought that you can take away the run game and they're in big trouble.
You're muted, Jacob.
Excuse me. Yeah, I agree with that, Fitz. How much of that, though, do you think it was injury related? What are you hearing with Avery? Is he, if he does need to tuck it and run it this weekend, is that something he's able to do physically?
Yeah, it is. And that's why they held him out of that last week. He went through, as a starting quarterback and a dual threat quarterback at that, an entire game without being tackled. He was in a clean pocket most of the night, or evaded the pressure, as we saw in a big fourth down play. He didn't take any hits. And I think that bought him another week of healing up from a very physical Colorado game. And from everything I'm hearing, he's good to go and fully involved in this game plan in terms of his skill set.
As Kansas State gets ready for KU, Fitz, looking at what the Jayhawks were able to do a week ago against Houston, defensively, it was the Kobe Bryant show, and it's going to be a completely different situation from going in up against the two quarterbacks that Houston brought out versus Avery Johnson, for sure. But for Kansas State offensively, is the game plan as simple as just take Kobe Bryant out of the equation. Like, don't throw to his side of the field. Just completely avoid him. Or is that a little bit too simplistic?
Yeah, I don't think that will impact anything they want to do. They went at Travis Hunter at Colorado when he was on the field. You know, the thing is West Virginia attempted to do something that actually Kansas might be better equipped on the back end to do. West Virginia just didn't have the dudes in the back of their defense to cover as well as you need to if you want to try to take away the run game. Kansas might feel like they have the ability to do that with better personnel on the back end, but they also don't have the same personnel up front to stop the run that West Virginia had. That's been a strength of their defense. So, he's just unavoidable. The way K-State runs its offense, it's very fluid, and it puts a lot of burden on the quarterback to make the right reads and put the ball where it needs to go. I don't see them avoiding anyone, but may not be a bad idea with that dude.
So tell me, Fitz, because Garrett Green being gone deceives me in what to look at K-State's defense as last week. I look at it and a team was finally able to run the ball on them because that's been what they've been trying to take away, but it was almost all Garrett Green. And then he goes down. So now that wasn't as big a test on the ground as they're going to see from Kansas with those two talented backs. Do you feel like K-State's going to make Jalen Daniels beat them? Or like they have to so many teams like load up to stop the two running backs and make Jalen Daniels do it? Is that still the game plan?
I'd imagine so. They'll pressure that line of scrimmage. I think Jalen Daniels as a runner is the concern now, as it is for KU and Avery Johnson, because the Garrett Green effect, they both had problems stopping that dude. And the only reason that K-State was able to stop him was he exposed himself to a big hit right before halftime and it didn't work out. I mean, it was a great play by Austin Moore and just took him out of the game. But K-State's defense is very physical, and that is a risk you run when you run your quarterback or move your quarterback outside the pocket. So I think K-State's just going to have to play their typical defense, which is pressure the line of scrimmage and to the point of taking away the run game. But they've never had to put up so many resources there they get exposed on the back end. But also, they better spy Jalen Daniels. They better, because he's getting back to his running game. And if he's doing that, then KU's offense has a lot more dimension to it.
Going back to Avery Fitz, one thing that Kansas defensively has really struggled with basically all season long is containing the quarterback. And, you know, they've made, I think I made the joke a few weeks ago, they make every quarterback in the Big 12 look like Michael Vick, you know, when they're out on the field because they can just get ran all over. Do you anticipate Wildcats leaning into that and Avery utilizing his legs more in this game than maybe what we saw against West Virginia?
Well, certainly more than West Virginia, but, you know, possibly more than we've seen this season if he's
really
feeling like he's 100%.
Yeah.
This is a big part of the issue with KU's defense is that quarterback run game. And this will easily be the most mobile quarterback they'll face this season. And I just think K-State's going to come out and try to run the ball quite a bit. Between Giddens and Dylan Edwards, who seems, you know, prone to have a huge game right now, it just seems like the perfect window and matchup for him to break loose. And Avery Johnson, I think K-State can do a lot of damage on the ground, which gets back to your previous question, Tommy, about avoiding players in the secondary. Turn them into tacklers as much as you can. And if KU takes that away, then try to take advantage of that.
All of these things we're saying is why I felt like this feels like a shootout to me, Fitz. Mm-hmm. I think both offenses are going to be humming. I mean, Vegas has it at 55. I like the over there, but I do think this will be a game where both teams are able to score. And then to Tommy's point, you know, on turnovers, that may be a big fact. Both of these defenses are capable of that, right? KU's been inviting teams to throw it a ton so they can turn them over. We know Kansas has some of the best in the business at doing that. And then you're looking at a situation with two quarterbacks. Avery Johnson, the young quarterback. How key do you think a turnover or two might be? Or is K-State a big enough favorite that it won't kill them if they do make a couple of mistakes?
Good questions. It just depends on where the mistakes are. If you do them, you know, the way you did at BYU, you're going to get thumped. You know, they led directly to scores. So it does kind of depend on if you make a mistake, how much of a price do you pay for it. But I also think, you know, K-State comes in here. The only teams that have run up numbers on K-State this year have had really efficient passing quarterbacks. We saw that at Colorado. Shedeur Sanders was unconscious in that game. I think he had 6 incompletions whole game over with 30 more throws. The young guy at Tulane was really good. So if Jalen Daniels can hurt them with the pass, they'll be able to keep up scoring. But I think K-State's the better balance in the offense. They have the capability of hurting you both ways. And I keep coming back to this. It's on K-State's home field, and that is an advantage in itself. We'll see how it plays out. KU certainly is capable of winning this game. They're capable of turning this into a shootout, but that's going to require the K-State defense maybe to do some things they haven't done this year.
Following up on the turnover question, Fitz, we talked on Monday with Wyatt Thompson, and one of the things that we discussed with him was just the growth this season of Marquise Siegel and what he's been able to do defensively for Kansas State, and really just the development of him as, you know, being able to not only defend well, but also be that interception guy. And he did it against West Virginia as well. What have you seen as far as his growth overall and what he means to that defense?
He's turned into a really good leader. He has high expectations for himself, but he also, I'm be blunt here, he can be picked on. BYU picked on him. That was a lot of their offensive success, and they only had like 250 yards winning 38-9. But a lot of it was thrown right at him. So that'll be an area that I wouldn't be surprised if KU tries to get that matchup and exploit that, because he hasn't been great in coverage. He's been better in coverage this year. He's maybe less confused on some of the calls, but maybe he's just a step behind receivers on occasion. So keep an eye on Marquise Siegel, number 21, and what KU tries to attempt to do on offense.
Bubba Sugar, PowerCat.com, Tim Fitzgerald, our K-State insider, joining us. You brought up a little bit ago, Fitz, that, you know, efficient quarterbacks have given K-State fits. Jalen Daniels is a really interesting watch then when you say that, because early in the year, he was one of the most inefficient quarterbacks in the country. Now, though, he's put 2 games together where we've started to see that old Jalen Daniels, who was defined by efficiency, and his last game was the most efficient he's played. As you've watched it, which Jalen Daniels do you think is in Manhattan? Because if it's the, you know, if it's the Jalen Daniels of the last 2 weeks, and that's what gives K-State trouble, I think that's where we look at this game. And now, as K-State fans might look at it, become a little bit concerned.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth in that. I mean, you hate to boil a game down and say, if this kid plays well, they'll win. But that might be the truth for Jalen Daniels in Kansas. I don't see a road to victory for KU in which he's bad, and maybe not if he's just okay. I think Jalen Daniels needs to find his old ways and prove he can win a Big 12 road game. And, he's a whale of a talent. I think he's an amazing playmaker. And if he settles in, I think there's been some problems, you know, fitting him into this new offensive scheme, the new philosophies, the play calling. And I think they found a middle here that is working a little bit better for Kansas.
I think what I'm so excited about or looking forward to with this matchup, maybe even a little bit different than in other years, is that, you know, I know that as the winning streak for Kansas State has gotten to 15 years, almost every year, KU, I think maybe it actually has been every year, KU can play the spoiler to Kansas State, but they've not always had the capability of being actually doing that, completing that, achieving that. They can this year, and it's a different matchup than what we thought it would be at the beginning of the year, where we thought both of these teams could be in the Big 12 hunt. It's different now because Kansas State has a lot to play for to be able to continue on that path to a Big 12 title. But then KU also can just kind of unload everything and play that spoiler because the season hasn't really gone the way that they wanted it to go. Do you anticipate just with both of those two things coming together and clashing for Kansas State and for KU, that will play a big piece in that game? Or is that more on the external and doesn't really get in, you know, to the way that the teams are preparing?
If you look at it from K-State's angle, you recognize the fact that KU might want to win this to salvage some dignity out of a season that was supposed to be historic. But if you look at it from KU's angle, you see victories and salvaging a season, not through beating your rival alone, but by finding a way to fight through the bad start and get bowl eligible and do something with your season. But either way, there's a tremendous amount of motivation here on the Kansas side that, you're right, hasn't always been there. They could pound their chest if they wanted to ruin a season, but you got to be able to pound the other team, and they weren't able to do that. Now, they were really close to doing it last year with a backup quarterback, and I think it showed how much Lance Leipold's lifted this KU program and made this a better matchup, and we'll see if that can be replicated this season at the Bill.
K-State's got to have it. We almost got to the point, like, I mean, BYU, they snuck it out. Iowa State snuck it out, unfortunately, because what we've been talking about now is even more true, that K-State's got to win them all to get in there. They got to win this one. That's enough motivation in and of itself, isn't it? How much have they, and I know they say it, but how much do you think they can separate this from rivalry? Do you even want to? Do you want to embrace it? Or is the focus more on, this is another game we have to have if we want a chance at a national championship?
I think that's the message in the locker room. We just need to keep winning to progress through the season to get to the Big 12 title game. You win out, you're in Arlington. I think that's the message. But the 43% of the locker room that are Kansas kids are going to be pretty motivated in this. Yeah. And so there is a duality there that can play in K-State's favor. But anytime you're playing a night game at home, in nice weather, you're going to be up for the game, whether it's, you know, you're playing Kansas or you're, you know, playing Oklahoma State or anyone else in this conference. So I expect K-State to kind of have their normal excitement for a home game at night against, you know, a pretty good team. And I think they'll rise to the occasion, but this is a rivalry. Nothing weird's really happened in the last 15 years, but Saturday night could be the night.
How hard is it to not look ahead to the collision course that is Iowa State? Because, I mean, where BYU is, obviously they hold the head-to-head victory over Kansas State. They're undefeated in the conference. It's going to come down to Farmageddon, right, with Kansas State and Iowa State, if K-State can continue to stack up these victories. Is that difficult to, I think, you know, maybe from just anybody's perspective, to not be thinking about what lies ahead and what, just over a month from now?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, whether it's Kansas in this game, maybe not Houston next week, unless they play out of their minds. You get an off week, and then you've got Arizona State and Cincinnati at home. And look, that's 3 out of 4 at home, but all three of those opponents have an edge to them. KU seems to be rallying. The other two have succeeded far beyond what we thought they would be this year. And then, oh yeah, you go to Iowa State. There's not an easy step in this. And even going out on the road to Houston, anytime you're on the road, you don't know. But I do think this is very intriguing. But as you mentioned, Kansas State has an opportunity to beat Cincinnati, which is now in the picture. Arizona State a little bit. And, of course, Iowa State, which is soundly in the picture, and win all the tiebreakers with all of them. And they already have a win over Colorado. They have, you know, anyone else you can think of that might be contending other than Texas Tech, they'll have the tiebreaker on. So yeah, this sets up great for K-State, but you just got to line them up and pick them off. You got 5 games. If you win all 5, you go to Arlington and most likely play BYU.
What do you guys have for us special this week? Sunflower Showdown at Go Power Cat.
I did a daily delivery kind of on what we talked about here today. So you can go check that out either at Go Power Cat or YouTube on our Go Power Cat channel about, you know, thanking Lance Leipold for making this game important to KU too, because it's been missing. We'd have the Power Cat pregame podcast that's up. We'll have the Friday walkthrough in the morning. And we've got all kinds of written content, of course, coming out at Go Power Cat. You can check it out at either GoPowerCat.com or our YouTube channel, Go Power Cat. And of course, we've also got a preview on our Big 12 Insiders channel of this game that is available for everyone to watch.
You can follow Fitz on social media at Life of Fitz. It's not the same implications we thought on both sides, but I do think it is the level of competition, I hope it is, that we thought we might get to start the year. Fitz, we appreciate it. Enjoy the game. We'll be back here next week. Break it all down.
Thank you.
There goes Tim Fitzgerald. That's a good point. Thanks, you know, to Lance Leipold. You know, this game was close last year, Tom. It was a 4-point game. First time in a while it's been close. So you got to go back to like 2018 before last year to find it. And this is it for KU. I do think it's as simple as, and I know Shreyas yesterday said, oh, you know, they can still get to a bowl game. They can. This matters to KU fans more than making a bowl game, doesn't it? More than making a mayonnaise bowl?
I don't know about making a bowl game. It's probably neck and neck. Really, because it's a 15-year streak of them not being their in-state rival. So, yeah, it's extremely important to be able to hang your hat on that. But this program, at least in the Leipold era, has been judged by their ability to make bowl games. That's really what's, because they hadn't in so long. So, like, yeah, like that's still extremely important too.
Which of these outcomes would you prefer? Beating K-State and not making a bowl game, or losing to K-State and making a bowl game?
For me personally, it would be losing to K-State and making a bowl game. Because that's my benchmark. I want them to be bowl eligible. And I think that's a lot of KU fans. Like, their benchmark is, we don't always consistently need to be national champions, but we need to at least be playing in the around the holidays. That's extremely important. So for me, I can only speak for myself. It's okay to lose. I mean, they've lost 15 years in a row, so it's fine with me if they lose a 16th year in a row, but still make a bowl game.
Okay. You're probably right. I just don't care about bowl games as much, I guess. At least not those bowl games where you've got 2 5-win teams playing each other.
When you're on the outside looking in for so long.
Playing Central Michigan.
When you're out in the desert for a decade and a half and everybody else gets to enjoy time in the Oasis and you don't, that becomes extremely important. So for me,
they've been in the Sunflower Showdown Desert for 15 years, decade and a half.
I get it, but you play that game every year.
Yeah.
It's you're guaranteed to play that game every year. You're not guaranteed to make a bowl.
All right. It's going to be fun either way. We'll see. Can't wait for it. Glad it's going to be more competitive. I think it'll be more competitive. We'll come back, react to any of that. The IHOP hotline, by the way, is back open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays. New IHOP house faves, all your favorites for just $6, Monday through Friday. We'll catch our breath. 2 straight guests means the phone lines are open for you. Sports Daily, Albrecht and Caster coming right back.
Tell your smart speaker to play 97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Oh, okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
You want to win some HTO? Now is your chance. A free iced tea, more than 25 flavors to choose from, sweet and unsweet, and a free iced or hot coffee drink featuring free rain coffee. You can win one of each right now at any of the 3 Wichita Metro locations, East or West Wichita or in Derby. All you got to do to win is text the keyword tea to the short code 20357. That's tea to 20357. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We come back here to Sports Daily, and Tommy, we have talked a little bit kind of bird's eye on the World Series. We probably won't have time tomorrow when we get game one. So let's look at this series and kind of make some predictions. I can tell you that I really would prefer if the Dodgers win this series. But man, I'm kind of liking the matchup for the Yankees a little bit more.
Does that simply come down to just the lineup from top to bottom, or
no? It's the pitching. It's the rotation. The Dodgers' rotation isn't very good right now. Now they can do a lot of things to get through that. The futures market right now, the Dodgers are slight favorites, and again, I would really prefer the Dodgers win this. I just think the Yankees bring a whole lot more starting pitching that we can, you know, get a feel for coming into it. So for me, it's hard to not take that as the thing, because I think both of these lineups are great. Although I think the Dodgers is better. I think both the bullpens have enough arms. Just that starting pitching advantage seems to pretty clearly be with the Yankees.
I think the interesting thing about the Yankees this season is that, you know, really what they've become known for over the last, I don't know, 10 years, maybe even further back than that, probably the last time they won a World Series, is that it's a team that is usually full of star power, but they typically underperform. They typically, you know, don't live up to the expectations. And whether or not those expectations are fair or unfair year in and year out, we can debate that all day long, but they're real. It's the reality. And they've underperformed. But this is the first time in a long time that the Yankees collectively as a whole have not underperformed their expectations. They're right there. Now, individually, there are going to be players that you're going to look at and you're going to say, you know, yeah, like they need to probably come alive more in a World Series to have a great chance to win. Everybody knows the historical struggles that Aaron Judge has had in the playoffs over the course of his career. So that's really where you're going to start when you start talking about underperforming expectations. But they've been able to make up for it with guys like Giancarlo Stanton and others that have just absolutely blown up in the postseason. You're going to have to collectively have everybody when you're taking on a lineup like the Dodgers. You're going to have to keep pace offensively. Now, if the rotation for the Yankees, obviously headlined by Gerrit Cole, if they're able to neutralize that Dodgers offense, easier said than done. Even if you've got great pitching and the Yankees do, the Dodgers lineup is so potent. Then I think it does shift back to that Yankees lineup to try to keep pace as best as they can.
I think the winning, you know, team here is going to have to score a ton of runs. I think they both probably will score a lot of runs. It's just like in the first four or five innings, it'll be advantage Yankees. But and I thought their bullpen did a really nice job against the Royals. I do. And I'm a lot of what I'm going from is what we've seen in the postseason. The Dodgers the Dodgers can totally come in here now and slug everybody. I'm going to tell you right now, and I don't root for the Dodgers normally, but it'll be far easier for me to root for Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani than it will be the Yankees. So I don't have this long-term hatred of the Dodgers like I do the Yankees. They just spend a ton of money now, so I'm kind of tired of that. But I like Kershaw. I like a lot of the players on that team. So it's a pretty easy root for the Dodgers moment for me, but you're a National League guy. You may be on the opposite side of that. It's just that the Yankees, growing up, the Yankees were the soul crushers for me in baseball. So I can't have them win in a World Series.
If they were the soul crushers to anybody, they were the soul crushers to me. Because when I was a kid, it was the Braves and the Yankees in the World Series basically every year, and the Yankees always beat them. So I get it. I mean, I'm right there alongside you. I grew up not liking them, not wanting them. I mean, it was just everything you could think of going all the way back to the 96 World Series where the Yankees just, that was kind of.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
When, you know, obviously Joe Torre had just gotten there and Derek Jeter had come up and all of that. And then they went on their run of dominance. And so, I get it. And I'm a National League guy by nature. So I don't really have a problem with the Dodgers all that much. Although in recent years, they've been the kryptonite to my Braves in the playoffs usually. So that's not fun either. But I just think from a 30,000-foot view, not being a fan of either one of these teams from a star power perspective, as we talked about earlier this week, it checks all the boxes. Just from that, in that regard, it's must-see TV. It's must-watch games in the World Series just because of Judge and Ohtani and obviously Garrett Cole and Mookie Betts and Juan Soto. I mean, you name it, like the list of the stars goes on and on.
So I'll tell you that it's a soul crusher. And I know that you're Braves have, but you got to understand the Rangers, Tommy, have been until not now, but used to be most of my life as like when you're the most emotionally invested, right? When you're a kid, the Rangers made the playoffs three times ever in like my entire life, 25, 30 years. And they won one game against the Yankees in their three postseasons. They played the Yankees all three times, and the other two times were sweeps. So they were 1-9 in those three series. So you go through most every season, and your favorite team is usually like the worst team in baseball. You finally break through to the postseason just to get absolutely crushed by the Yankees all three times. I hate the Yankees so much. Beating the Yankees in, what was that, the 2010 ALCS, was one of the most satisfying sports things for me in my entire life. I hate the Yankees. I don't like them at all. I will not root for anybody. I would root for anybody rather than the Yankees. Anybody. But also, I'm glad that's there for this World Series. I am. Like, I'm glad that they are there, and I can hope that they get their souls crushed in this series. That's a good thing for baseball, I think. The Yankees, to me, are the most hateable team in all of sports. Always have been. Even more than the Lakers. Even more than the Cowboys, if you're a Cowboys hater. Because I feel like if you're looking at the NFL, the Cowboys are probably the most hated and most loved team. But to me, the Yankees will always be sports' greatest villain. Always, always.
Yeah, I think we're arguing kind of about the same thing, that the Yankees right. just are the evil empire, but who's had it worse over the years? I mean, I can go back to Game 2 in the World Series in 1996, and the Braves won Game 2. They went up 2-0, and the Yankees won the next four games, won the World yeah. Series. And that Game 2, by the way, was the last World Series game victory that the Atlanta Braves had for 25 years until 2021. Yeah. So, I mean, come on. Like, and then they played them again in 98 yeah. and the Yankees
but at
swept
least you
them.
Had
like, it's
just, all the like, division championships and all those things
cares?
In between. Like, we didn't have anything.
I mean, they won consecutive league title, like, you know, division titles and all of that. That was great. They should have won more than one World Series, and I blame the Yankees for the reason why they didn't.
Those teams were so good. Man, those teams were good. Hate the Yankees. So if there are any Yankee fans out there, go fly a kite. Go Dodgers. We'll all put on the Dodger blue. Everybody but you will. And it'll be fun. It will add to the World Series. This will be a fun World Series. For a World Series where we don't have a vested rooting interest, this is going to be a fun World Series because you can root against the Yankees. Maybe you can root against the Dodgers if you so choose. But it's because of these star players. And I cannot wait to see Shohei Ohtani play in a World Series. Cannot wait to see him play in a World Series. I think if you're baseball, and I know, and I make fun of the ratings honks all the time, like, of course this is going to be the most viewed. Of course it is. Like, that shouldn't surprise anybody, nor should it make that big of a statement to anybody. But I think the real win for baseball, more than anything else in this series, is getting Shohei on this stage. It's what they didn't get out of Trout forever. They get Shohei to this stage, and now the whole world can watch one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player we've ever seen.
I haven't looked at the odds for World Series MVP. I'm sure the odds on favorite is probably Stanton. Maybe. I don't know. Or at least he would be like a really popular pick because of what he's done this postseason. But I'm kind of with you. I mean, Ohtani being the World Series MVP, I mean, that would be the dream, I think, for Major League Baseball. And I think Judge, I mean, obviously Judge is a star also, but getting Ohtani in his very first World Series ever to take that game over and be the World Series MVP, that'd be my pick.
He is the odds-on favorite. Shohei Ohtani is. Aaron Judge is 2. Juan Soto's 3. Mookie Betts is 4. Now I'm gonna tell
you. Where's Stanton at? Is he not? He's not in there at all.
I'm gonna tell you. If you think that the Yankees are gonna win this World Series, you can get Stanton right now at 9.5-1. one of the great postseason hitters we've ever seen, you can get it 9.5 to 1. That's pretty appetizing. I'm just looking at BetMGM here. There are some really fun bets. Most steals, most RBI, most hits. Like there are some fun, most home runs. There are some really good bets and fun bets that you can make in this series. The total number of games in the series. Like if you think it's good, you can basically get 2 to 1 if you think it's a 7-game series. There's a lot of fun stuff to do with it. I kind of like Stanton at a World Series MVP as much as any of it. 9.5 for that guy.
The crazy thing about this matchup, again, going back to the star power point of it, is that you go through the massive names, the Ohtanis and Judges and Sotos and all of that, and you don't even get to a point to where you're mentioning names like Freddie Freeman and Teoscar Hernandez. It's not like Jack Flaherty is a Jazz Chisholm. Like there are names that are also stars in Major League Baseball that are overshadowed by the biggest in the game. And by the way, those players are also playing. So they're just from top to bottom. Like I don't know the last time that we've had a World Series with that much star power on both sides.
It's been a very long time. And the funny thing is, it's not coming from the rotations, right? You usually get to this point of the season and that star power has come in the starting pitching. Neither one of these teams are built that way this year. And quite frankly, neither team last year was built that way either. We've seen a little bit of a shift in baseball with that. Here's a fun one for you. One more bet to chew on here, Tommy. BetMGM has, will Shohei Ohtani throw a pitch in the World Series? 50 to 1 on yes. Now, I know he's been rehabbing, right? Could you see a moment where they're in a situation in a high leverage bullpen moment where he comes in to pitch? One pitch, 50 to 1 odds.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But then, like, the fact that it's there kind of made me, I'm like, man, if I'm Roberts and Ohtani is good, like his, and he's had enough time, I think, to be good, and he's rehabbed through, and you've got runners on first and second, you got a 1 or 2 run lead in the 7th or 8th inning, and they're like, I could see a scenario where you let Ohtani come in there and pump a little gas. I haven't paid enough attention to his rehab, though.
I think it's reckless. And I understand you're going for a championship, but it's a little reckless. I think it would be, I don't want to say never say never. I think it would be a long shot. I think it'd be a very long shot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it's all that different from him throwing a bullpen. If he's going to throw a bullpen, he's going to throw it as hard as he can, right? He's not going to let up. That's not the point of it. So I don't know. It's kind of a fun thing to chew on. I hadn't really considered that, but until I saw that bet. I don't, they may say that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, but maybe not. It'd be fun. It'd be awesome to see. You want to talk about juicy storylines. That'd be fantastic.
What are you, saying Dodgers win, Yankees win? What do you think? How many games? What's your prediction?
I will vomit in my mouth if I were to pick what I was talking about at the beginning. So I'm not going to do that. I will say Dodgers in, let's go 7, baby. Let's make this a 7-game series.
I'm going to say Dodgers in 6. I think Dodgers are able to make it happen. I think they win in 6 games.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not picking the Yankees. Even if I think they have a clear advantage in the starting rotation, I'm not gonna. Those words are not coming out of my mouth. 869-1240 is the IHOP hotline. You can reach it for one more full segment here on Sports Daily. We're coming right back on a Thursday. Don't go away.
...97.5 and 1240. Tell your smart speaker to play 97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
Again, everybody, happy Thursday to you. I've been excited about Thursday night football tonight when there's that much star power. Pal Jeffrey Parson chimes in. We're talking about Syracuse Pitt tonight. No, we absolutely will not be doing that. I would be talking out of my rear end. I know Jeffrey's a big Syracuse fan. But no, it's to me, Thursday Night Football is the NFL. I just get excited when these games are good. I am pro Thursday Night Football, two games on Monday Night Football. I don't mind it. And you know, I think Thursday Night Football has been a nice addition to the NFL. I think teams have gotten used to it. I think that, you know, it's a different wrinkle and everybody kind of has to do it. But this is why you get, look, these two teams have a chance to be two of the great stories of the NFL this year. The Rams, with the injuries that they've had, they now look like they're almost healthy. The Vikings with Sam Darnold. I'll tell you, though, the Vikings don't win tonight, and now it's two losses in a row. That kind of sucks for them because they feel like they should have beat Detroit, let alone potentially drop two in a row. Going on the road after that game against a healthy Rams team, I just have this tick in the back of my head tonight, Tommy. I'm worried about the Vikings if you're a Vikings fan. I'm kind of with PJ. I kind of like that Rams plus +3.
Yeah, I think my only hesitation with that is what I did bring up to PJ is that it might take a minute for the Rams offense to click on all cylinders because it's been a while since they've been at full strength. And, you know, so I think it's hard to have that expectation that right away from kickoff, if they have both Kupp and Puka available and they're healthy offensively, that it's just going to be pick up where they left off and just go right away. So the question on my mind is, how long then will that take? Are we talking the first series where it's a little bit rusty? Is it the first quarter? Is it the whole game? And that's worst case scenario for the Rams, is that it's the whole game where they're, you know, trying to figure out how to get on the same page offensively. Sean McVay is too good of a coach, I think, to allow that to happen for too long, but you never know. And that just makes me a little bit nervous when you've got your two star wide receivers both coming back for a Thursday night game and trying to find a way to get everybody back acclimated with one another. So I'm still probably going to ride with the Vikings in this game.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to mess with the line. I want to scream overs to the rooftops just because I want it to be so, but I have a hard time. I'd probably have to tease that down because I also think both teams are going to try to run the ball first and foremost. And if they do, it makes it a little trickier. Aaron Jones has been really good for the Vikings, And in this year where, you know, it's been more open in the NFL, outside of the Chiefs, obviously, but just, you know, the rest of the league feels like it's kind of a jumbled mess. I think both of these teams, if fully healthy, by the time the playoffs rolled around, these would be two teams capable. And maybe I'm higher on the Rams than I should be. Man, I'm high on their coach, high on their quarterback. They've been without these two star receivers essentially the entire season. And I just am excited for Stafford more than anybody else to see, you know, hopefully those two guys be able to be a part of the offense for a while. And if it is, now you've got those two receivers, Justin Jefferson's on the field at the same time. You got Aaron Jones out there, like all these stars. That's what I like. Give me that on Thursday Night Football. I wish we could flex into Thursday Night Football to make sure we get games like this and not games like we got last week. I know that's impossible, at least seemingly. But I wish we could flex it because this is far better for the league, what we'll see tonight versus what we saw last week.
The best thing about last week, and I know it was just a dud of a game, a stinker of a game with the Broncos and the Saints, and the Broncos obviously got the win, and you know, Bo Nix kind of was able to, you know, show off a little bit. But the best thing with that game was that you also had playoff baseball going on at the same time. And so for me, it was easy to just be like, yeah, I'm good with Thursday Night Football. I'm going to watch playoff baseball. You don't get that tonight. And luckily, it's a better matchup in the NFL. So that makes it a whole lot easier to be able to watch or even listen to that game.
Breaking news. So the Chiefs finally make official the DeAndre Hopkins news.
Okay.
Right?
Good.
So they send out a tweet 26 minutes ago, official. Right. They can welcome it in. Basically, they can talk about it now. They also follow that up with a roster update. Sky Moore is on the IR with a core muscle injury.
OK.
Core muscle injury for Sky Moore. Man, just like, what, do we have to pretend like these things happen? Like, obviously, that's whose roster spot DeAndre Hopkins is taking. But come on now. Like, you got to place him on IR, too.
I think it's about time for everybody to bid a fond farewell to Sky Moore. Don't you think?
Aren't we at that point now? I don't know why I feel so bad for him. I do.
Because you were the biggest Sky Moore believer.
No, it's not just that. I don't care that much about that. But like every time he gets an opportunity, like that dropped pass last week, I'm just like, oh man.
Like if you had an action figure that was named after you and it had the pull string with different phrases that you like to say, it would be Sky Moore, like for 2 years. It was all we heard, Sky Moore.
Or two, yeah, because the Chiefs put that much investment into him and it has just failed so colossally. Yeah. And he's not the only receiver that they've really swung and missed on. They've done that a lot over the years. But what I feel bad about is this gift-wrapped opportunity for a guy, and he just cannot stop fumbling it away. Maybe he'll go somewhere else and it'll get figured out. But man, you couldn't cherry pick a better opportunity for a young receiver than what he's had the last 3 years and the way the chips have fallen. But a core muscle injury today is placing him on the IR. That's the spot, though. That's the roster move for DeAndre Hopkins. It's official. Wish we would have got it yesterday because I'd like to hear Andy Reid's take on it, but we didn't. So we'll have it there. He'll practice. He'll play this week. I'm curious to see how much. That's something to watch. We'll get more into it with our picks tomorrow. We're coming right back. We got one more segment. We'll tell you what's on the network. We'll return on Sports Daily.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app